And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Al Epp from San Diego.
Wow. I am an alcoholic and my name is Alvin Floyd. The short version of my story is what a strange trip it's been. I was born here in San Diego. My dad was a career military man, and as we know that the drinking and the outside issues were never our problem, it was always us. And I can remember my fear back in kindergarten, and I started hiding in music, so I guess my first drug of choice was music. And I went on, and I started. My dad would let me have a beer, you know, watching games on the weekend and stuff, or you know, have a couple sips and stuff. And I just happened to grow up in the time that I think it's like the Renaissance of the 20th century. We had, back in the 60s, we had the women's rights, we had gay rights, we had the first protest against the war, against any war in the United States, and the counter-revolution, counterculture was starting. And, Bob Mosley of Moby Grape grew up four houses down from me. And one of my friends in high school, Gordon, his girlfriend was taking guitar lessons from Danny Weiss, who happened to be the lead guitar player for Iron Butterfly. So it was Bob who was responsible for bringing this substance with a 25 in it to the neighborhood. And, I know you find this hard to believe. I was a nerd in school, and I even went so far as to have a pocket protector. But see, with a pocket protector, you could put a joint in it, and no one would ever know that you had a joint in your pocket protector. And so I like to read a lot, and I was always just a few degrees off of center, and so. I know you find that hard to believe. So at 14 and a half, I came to the conclusion that all these fears and my insecurities would be cured with a spiritual experience. And so I just happened to read this book called The Psychedelic Experience, written by Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert. And they talked about taking this substance with a 25 in it and having a spiritual experience. So a group of us on Easter vacation, for the PC police out there, that's now known as spring break. And so we went out to the desert and I dropped. And I also had I don't know how much wine I had, but I had enough wine where at one point I became one with the grape. My fears, the insecurities, they disappeared, and in that moment I became a legend in my own mind. And that continued for another 14 and a half years. I started having blackouts early, and blackouts are similar to Vegas. What happens in a blackout stays in a blackout. And so a lot of my drunkalogue is alleged, but there are times that my blackouts were actually documented, not by myself, because obviously you can't document where you're not there, but the state found it necessary to document. Some of my adventures, and my first blackout adventure happened at 16, and I had my first hit and run in DUI, and didn't realize any of this happened until I found myself in waking up or coming to in juvenile hall, You know, you would think that would be enough to say you might have a problem, but you know, I didn't have anything to substitute for taking the fears and insecurities away, and so I just kept on doing what I was doing, and you know, I discovered my high school annual a couple of years ago, and I'm reading through and I go, you'd be a really great guy if you didn't drink so much, and you know, it's. You know, back then it was like, well, obviously you just haven't learned how to drink yet. You know, you're not having the fun I'm having. I went to San Diego State for one semester, but they didn't like our protesting, and so they asked us to leave. And so I started. I went to another college and helped SDS there. And in 1970, my student deferment was taken away due to a actor acting as a governor in this state, and my number was 6, and so I was going to get it, and so I joined the Navy Reserve so I could get another year of school before I went overseas, and in the year that I had, somehow they had convinced me to become a diver, and I thought that was going to be cool until I realized that I was going to be in country. And so I did my first tour in 1971, and I wasn't even 21 yet. And it was such a crazy thing. One minute you're fighting against the war, and the next minute you're in it. And over there I acquired another habit with the substance that started with an O. And my drinking increased. Because I wanted to drink like a man, you know, and I had no idea what a man was, but you know, I was always searching for the answer on the outside. The outside was going to have the answer, and so I come back from my first tour, and you know, if I was crazy before, I'm loony right now, and I had there were troubles in the supply route of that substance coming over here, and so well, I'll just volunteer for another tour. Yeah, you know, when you think about it now, he goes back to take chances of dying for his dope, and I also wasn't 21 yet, so I went back, but the real crazy thing is the chaos that was on the outside matched the chaos that was on the inside, and so I felt at peace, which is not a good place to be, but that's where it was. I come back from Vietnam from my last tour in 73, and I have no idea what I want to do. As some other people have spoken here, I helped start this meeting, and I think it's just from the fact that I helped start a lot of things in my life. And so in 74, along with the distribution of other substances, outside issues, I helped start a manufacturing plant for white snortable substances out in El Cajon. and proceeded to do that for the next 8 years. Going through some of my stuff, I realized that I was, I guess I must have had another DUI in 74 or 75, because I had the certificate of a drug or drinking class thing. Don't remember any of it. Have no idea what I had to do. My drinking increased. The one thing that really happened coming back from Vietnam is I'd become a daily drinker, and the outside issues helped me drink more. And my favorite spot to be was in a blackout, because at that point I didn't have to feel, I didn't have to think, I didn't have to do nothing. And I certainly didn't want to be here, because I didn't like what I had. Had no idea what I even wanted. In 79 is the first time I remember coming to AA. I had received, I'd gotten two DUIs in a relatively short period of time. And, you know, luckily I had a good lawyer, and my outside issues were supporting me financially very well. And But I didn't want to get sober. I didn't want to get clean. I was just trying to get my wife off my back. She had started going to Al-Anon and laying these pamphlets around the house. And it's like, an alcoholic? My dad's an alcoholic. I'm a druggie. You know, I'm a head. I don't have an alcohol problem. And so I initially started the go to coffee after the meeting routine. And so I pretended to get a sponsor. And he was there in body, but I had nothing. And so basically after a month or so, I was telling my wife that I was going to a meeting, and I was telling my sponsor I was doing something with my wife. And so I had the night open. And not only is alcohol cunning, baffling, and powerful, we are too. And so I believe I finally went, and I actually quit drinking, but I did not quit doing the other stuff. There was no way I could do that. It was like that was holding me together. And so there's that part in the book where you go out and drink, and I saw the progression of my disease, even though I didn't know I had a disease at the time. Because when I started drinking again, I was drinking more, and I was not getting the effect. And the one thing I remember is like, hey, maybe I've learned how to drink like a gentleman. But the next, from April of 80 to May of 81 was just a living hell. And, I don't really remember the numbers and stuff of the amount that I was doing, but the one thing I remember is I felt like I was this pane of glass, and every morning someone just picked me up and slammed me down on the ground, and I broke into 1,000 pieces, and I needed the drugs and the alcohol to glue me back together on a daily basis. And every day I lost a little more glass, so I had to use a little more filler. And it got to the point where I don't know when the filler outweighed the glass, but in May of 81, I was visiting some friends in OB, and we were going to go to Claremont the Hungry Stick to have some Big Dippers, and I ran into by surprise. A guy that I'd actually served with in country was there for some other business, and he happened to have that liquid 25 stuff with him, and so I dropped again, and I remember it was we were at the Hungry Stick, and just tripping, and someone said it was raining, and I'd always liked the rain, so I went outside and I was in the rain, and all of a sudden it hit me. It was like, I'm never going to recapture that first high, because that first high was so beautiful. It was so calming, and it was like chasing that carrot. And the more you did it and the faster you ran, the further it got away. And I finally realized it, and due to some of the activities, I had the opportunity to have guns in my mouth. I saw people disappear. It wasn't a good life. And at that point, I don't know what it was, but I just had enough to say, I can't do this anymore. And I was just so scared and petrified. I was just so rattled. I managed to call my wife and had her get me a taxi to bring me home, and she could tell something had happened. And this was on a Friday night. Oh, my sobriety date is May 15th, 1981. And I remember calling the VA hospital the next morning, and I'm still out there. And at the time, I wasn't ready to take any personal responsibility, so obviously I was blaming Uncle Sam for my dilemma. And they said, can you make it to Monday? And I go, I think so. And I went down there Monday, and I started their outpatient program. And remember, they gave me a schedule and suggested that I start going to meetings, and I made it to Old Town with less than a week of sobriety, and Ted Howell made me a greeter. And yeah, I wasn't looking people in the eye. I was just looking at their feet, and you know, but for a person with a inflated ego and a almost non-existent self-esteem, just shaking the hands made me feel better, and it kind of was like a drug on its own. Well, after being an outpatient for I think it was 10 days or so, they allowed me to become an inpatient, and it was the VA hospital in La Jolla, and I was so good I got to be there 34 days. I had no resistance at all, but and I had to lie to get out, because they made you do the first three steps in the hospital, and I couldn't do step number two because I was an atheist. You know, I wouldn't even discuss God with you. You can't talk about nothing. So I basically had to make something up just to get the hell out of there. It just so happened that my roommate was also in Santee, where I was living at the time, and he didn't have his driver's license taken away. Oh yeah, I forgot to tell you about my driver's license. I happened to be documented by the state a few more times, and besides the two in 79, in 81, I believe it was in January, I had one DUI, and in February of 81, I had two more. So I had three DUIs within 60 days, and the last two were within 30 days. I don't think the state would appreciate someone like that today. Again, because of my good lawyer, I didn't spend any time in jail. I just paid like a $1,000 fine or so, which was nothing. What happened though was the DMV caught up with me in points, and they took my license. They sent me a letter in the mail saying you can't drive anymore. Well, this like floored me. I was like, how can I deal drugs if I can't drive? Because, you know, there was a part of me that didn't mind following laws as long as I agreed with the laws. But the drug laws shouldn't have been there in the first place, so you don't have to follow those. But the driving, man, that's like a serious thing. I can't be caught driving without a license. So but as it was, the state deemed us both unemployable. And it was really weird because as soon as they quit drinking and using, it's like my brain went into overload, and I could barely read again. I could barely function. It was just like I got hit with a big whoop stick, and I'm not doing anything. And so, you know, we didn't have anything to do, so we were just going to meetings. We were going to, we were going to meetings to get away from our wives, but you know, it was. I would not suggest anyone doing a sobriety the way I did it, because I did the first step. I had no problem admitting that I was powerless and that my life became unmanageable. But I could not go to step two. I just refused. And so part of the VA had aftercare, and I was going to marriage counseling, and I basically was giving answers that I thought they wanted to hear, but not telling the truth, because I wouldn't have known truth if it was sitting in front of me. And so after my first year of sobriety, I'm just starting to go crazy. And so I did start telling the truth, because, you know, I didn't want to drink again, and I wanted to get rid of how I was feeling. And so I went through that brutally honest phase of alcoholism, and, you know, calling the spade a spade, and calling a club a spade if that's the way you felt. And so we got divorced. The house that I was living in, I was renting a room, and it got sold. I got fired from a job, and I'd never been fired the whole time I was drinking and using, never got fired once. And so I found myself with all my worldly belongings in a 73 Super Beetle. And, I don't know how many days I'd done it, but I remember coming out one morning, and I am just livid, just madder than, and I just start ranting and cussing and yelling, and I honestly don't know how long it lasted. It could have been 3 minutes, it could have been 20 minutes. I have no idea. The miracle took place. I knew I'd been listened to. I didn't know who heard me, but I knew I'd been heard. But my ego wouldn't let me call him God, so I called him Fred. But Fred was cool. You know, I could stick him in my back pocket. He liked to wear shorts and tie-dye. I don't know where he'd get that idea. But, I could take Fred everywhere I went, and then it came to me, God, as you understand him. Oh, and the part in more about alcoholism, for the first 4 or 5 months of sobriety, because they used to read it a long time ago, and I swore it said, take a trip, take another trip. And I go, I did that. And that's how I related. Now, had I actually heard, take a trip, don't take a trip, I would have never believed you. There was no option there. You always took a trip. So, I got Fred. I'm starting to do the deal. And, AA took on a whole different life. And ended up meeting what turned out to be my best friend for the next 15 years. His name was Donnie T. And at 16, he decided to leave us by his own choosing. But Donnie and I, it was like wonderful trouble together. And you've got the books out now, like The Power of Now, The Power of Intention. Well, I think I was 3 and he was 2 when we decided. We were going to go on our first out-of-state roundup. And I believe the Las Vegas roundup is on Thanksgiving weekend. And so it was the Tuesday before Thanksgiving that we come up with the idea that we're going to do this. And, people are telling us that, you're not going to be able to get a room, all this stuff. It also happened that they were having a prize heavyweight fight in the same hotel that the roundup was in. The Las Vegas Grand Prix was that weekend. And they had some other huge electronics convention something going on. And Donnie had this huge Mercury that you could lay down and your feet and head wouldn't touch the doors. Sure. And so we brought pillows and sleeping bags with us, and we're just, listening to tapes and just having a good old time driving there. And we drive into Vegas, and it's just vacancy, 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 vacancy. We get to the hotel where the roundup is. We could have had the penthouse there if we wanted. We didn't want to spend that much money. We went a couple blocks back, changed, showered, driving back to the roundup. No vacancy, no vacancy, no vacancy, no vacancy. It was like God had parted the waters. And at that time, what I came to believe was that if my intention and hearts are true, things are going to happen, and it doesn't matter what man says. Nothing stops Fred. It took a couple years, and Fred finally became God. A group of us guys had. I got to be a part of another meeting early in its infancy. 23 years ago, we meet in this building on Monday nights. We're known as Water Walkers 2, and it used to be Water Walkers until personalities over principles split the meeting. that's my home group, and I love that meeting, and the reason I love that meeting is we've hit the heart. I think we've hit the heart of the program, and we've had the same topic for 20 some years, and we'll never change it. And that one topic is, how is God working in your life today? And initially we figured we would do that, and we would change the topic when we ran out of something to say. And so far that hasn't happened. But a group of us water walkers it wasn't an official retreat, but we'd just like to go up the coast to Big Sur and just hang out and fellowship. And so there were seven of us scheduled, and people started getting the flu and dropping off. So first was going to be seven, then there was going to be five of us. Kept on going down, and it came down to two. It was going to be Donnie and me, and then he got sick. Well, I'd already scheduled a vacation from work and stuff, so I go, I'm just going to do this myself. And so, you know, I go driving up there, and all of a sudden, when I passed Morro Bay, heading up towards San Simeon, it was like my brain went blank. And, you know, I'm just keep on driving up the coast, and I keep on looking for our spot that we'd been to, and miss it totally. I get all the way past Big Sur, and it's like, well, I might as well pick up my supplies while I'm here, and I start driving back. And all of a sudden, I just like felt something like pull in here. And it was the something Pfeiffer State Park. And so I pull in there, and the female ranger goes, have you ever been here before? And you know, normally I would have said, oh yeah, many a time, and just, you know, bullshitted. And this time it just went, no. I just know this is where I'm supposed to be. And she goes, well, I'm gonna show you my favorite spots, and you pick it. In the first place she showed me, the Big Sur River is running down there, and there's this little creek part that kind of made like a U-turn, and it was about 10 inches deep, so you could put your six-pack of soda in the river, and it was like a liquid refrigerator. And so I had my truck, I had my tent. That weekend they have the first Big Sur Jazz Festival. I'm a music nut. Not from here to where that speaker is the back of the stage. You know, had I pretended to know it all, I would have missed it all. But that was the first time I consciously recognized, you know, God speaking to me, and me actually being quiet enough to listen. Another thing that happened in my first year is I had a lot of resentments and anger towards my parents. And so it was suggested by my sponsor and my counselor and a few other people that I don't talk to them until I can get rid of them. So I wrote on my parents for 2.5 years. I filled up many a notebook, but those columns saved my life. And when I was turning four, I invited. My dad was in the hospital. He had had another stroke and couldn't get out. But I invited my mom to see me get my four-year cake. Right now, I live at my home, and I'm taking care of my mom today. So, you know, it's not something that I've planned or really wanted to, but the miracle is I have the heart to want to do it and to give back. And this is a person I wouldn't even talk to for 2.5 years, and we're living in the same town. You know, this program, it's as difficult and it's as easy as we want to make it. And you know, I do some simple things. I don't really like to call them character defects. I personally call them now my personality highlights that are showing themselves in public. And so, well, you know, I find defective just it doesn't resonate, because Because if I am supposed to be made in the image of my Creator, it doesn't have defects, you know? So if He doesn't have defects, why should I? And I just had to do it. I'm sorry. But, you know, I have such a boring life today. This morning I got up and had some coffee with God, and then I got together with these guys for breakfast, and, you know, we're talking about the 12-step work and, go home and do some business. I get to come here tonight. Normally Monday through Friday, what I do is I have my coffee with God. I go outside and I meditate. And I've been doing it long enough to where, for the most part, I've learned how to quiet my head enough to where I get to hear the words that aren't spoken or hear the voice that's not spoken and understand the words that aren't said. And then I go in and journal. And I don't look at what I'm writing. I just open up a file. I start typing away. Sometimes it can be 2 minutes. Sometimes it can be 10 minutes. And then I shut it down. And about my sobriety birthday is in May. So in April, I usually open it up. And I just start tallying my personality highlights for the year. And whoever the winner is, and sometimes there's a tie, that's what I do my new fourth step on. Because it's a never-ending thing. And I was talking to a guy this morning, and he goes, God, you got a resentment. He goes, I hate resentments. I go, someday you're going to learn to like resentments. He goes, why? I go, well, if you see it in them, it means you have it. And if you have it, it means it's working against you and you want to get rid of it. So if you do the steps and get rid of it, you're going to be a better person. So you get to be thankful for resentments. The columns we use, I use 8 columns when I write, and it was born out of laziness. And basically, in the 8 columns, we have one column specifically designated for our personality highlights. And then we also have 2 columns where we're at fault, both active and passive. So when it comes time to do the 8th step, you know who you have to make the amends to and for what. You don't have to go back and think about it. It's all there. And I remember when I first came in here, I'd look at that 9th step and I'd be, oh, there's no way in hell. Like, no way. It's like, you don't know who I am and what I've done. And the thing is, when you're looking at the 9th step with first or second step eyes, you're clueless, you know, and you're just running on fear. And when it came time to start making the amends, I went up to this family business that I was in, and, you know, they don't like people leaving the company. And they're very serious about their layoff plans. And it was just like, it was a miracle. You know, I shouldn't have walked away, and I did. And I've never had a look back. The freedom of the 4th and 5th step is, you know, I might not be proud of what I did, and I might not want to see it printed in the San Diego Union, but I'm not ashamed of it anymore. You know, I'm shameless. And that in itself would be a big enough prize. But I'd be cutting myself short from what I've gotten. At night, for my 10th step, it's one simple question. Have I been a good boy today? You know? And if I get to go to sleep right away, I've been a good boy. And if I don't get to go to sleep right away, I get to think about it. And you know, I hate to admit it, but it was a couple months ago. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning when I finally figured it out. But you know, as soon as I figured it out, I did the columns. I saw what I had done, and the next morning I immediately set into motion what I had to do to clean my plate up. And yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that 10 years, even 5 years ago. I wasn't doing that. But I appreciate what AA has given me. The 11th step and my prayer and meditation, man, I would be totally lost if I didn't have my coffee with God every morning. That is probably the nicest part of the day, because I'm out of me. I'm not thinking about you. I'm just getting that closer connection. I know that AA doesn't have a theme song, but if it did, I would nominate the Beatles, "All You Need Is Love," because before the book, before the steps or traditions, what it comes down to is the love of one alcoholic loving another alcoholic until they learn how to love themselves. Thank you for loving me tonight.